take a moment before I begin to find out what is the quality of your heart mind like right now. Right, and in this practice, we don't push ourselves into ideal views. We find out what's here. Our doorway is always to start where we are and find out where we are and bow to where we are and accept where we are. That's our doorway. So you're not supposed to have an ideal mind state right now. You might, but find out what's actually here. So take a moment, like put your dipstick in your oil gauge. Find out what it's like in here. Is it friendly, indifferent, or hostile? Where is it on that spectrum? Is it dull to bright? Where is it on that spectrum? Does it feel kind? Does it feel spacious, still, dense, resistant, frustrated, luminous, radiant, expanded? What is the quality of the heart mind right like right now? Not how you want it to be, but how it is. Because our constant rejection, actually, very often, of what's here in favor of an ideal, there in that gap is suffering. The gap between the way things are and the way I think they should be. So in practice, we close that gap to find out where we are. The eye of welcoming and accepting comes there, and that begins a journey beyond what we already know. Even if what we know and what we find is the most horrible mind state that I'm so used to waking up with every day, if we approach that with new hands, new eyes, this is our door. So anyone, call out one word. What is the quality of the heart mind right now? Anybody? Doesn't have to be difficult, might be lovely.
Lethargic.
Yeah. Anything else?
Calm.
Yeah.
Stuck, yeah, that's a place, isn't it? We can get to this kind of impasse kind of place. Anything else?
Playful.
Yeah.
Speedy.
Like, yeah. Anything else?
Supportive.
You feel supportive and supported right now? Right. Yeah.
Flat,
yeah. It's one of the ones we tend not to prefer. Mm. Isn't it? Yeah, where the kind of quality of the heart mind is just like, which is different than equanimity, right? It's got this kind of almost like the life has gone out of it a little bit.
Still.
So I see. Still.
Stable.
So, what do you want to know? I'm curious if anybody knows what the theme of today is. I do. There's a particular thing, don't worry, I know what it is. But I wonder if that's pertinent for anyone, if that's part of why you're here, if it's the theme that's written on the program. Is relevant at all for you? There's a few nods. Yeah. Some of you probably, it's like, I just come anyway.
Sorry, what was written on the
front? Exactly. So the theme of the day is, potentially, if we want to go there, is not self and self-acceptance. Not self and self-acceptance. And just see already what your mind does with that. Maybe it's like, oh, God. Anybody get that response?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. What is it like? That sounds hard work or what? Which part? Have you got a sense? So I'm very happy to speak about those. They're beautiful themes, if that's what's wanted here. It's very interesting in the tradition, in the Dharma tradition of the monks and nuns that have been my teachers, the tradition is that people ask for a Dharma talk. So the tradition in Thailand, at least, is you request, you say to the teacher, please, to the monk, to the nun, please share the Dharma with us. And then they sit there, and you say it a second time, and then you say it a third time, and that really, it's like, yeah, I really want this. It's so that I don't just kind of spiel on, and you're going like, oh God, there wants to be the heart that actually wants to hear that, the Dharma. So I say that because I think the ripening of the ground for our listening is really important for teachings. So I'll just say a little bit before lunch. You can have lunch and see where you are. I'll start with a story. They usually go, don't they? It's a famous story used in the East to illustrate this beautiful teaching that the Buddha speaks about. He has a beautiful, beautiful set of teachings. But one of the pieces he points to is the teaching of not to self. How we keep getting tripped up in our life, because he's interested in the end of suffering, right? And not being tripped up anymore. He says we keep getting tripped up because you take experiences to be you when they don't actually have that nature. We take our thoughts to be me, our feelings to be me, our mind states to be me. We take, if someone stands on our toe, they did it to me, right? And the me part is, depending on what's happening, more or less strong. And he says, really examine that, because therein is a doorway for you for release, if you really see clearly into this. That's not the story, that's the teaching. The story is, once upon a time, there was, in the light, before dawn comes, so in the, you know, whatever time of day that is at the moment, 6, I guess, something like that, wouldn't it? Before the light is clear, there is a man on a lake, taking off from one side of the shore, and he's rowing his little boat, and he's going along, and he sees another boat coming from the opposite side of the lake shore. And he sees that if they just both keep going the way they're going to go, they're going to bang into each other. So he kind of rows. Is that how you row? I don't come from a rowing. anyway, whatever he did, he tried to get out. Doesn't look right, does it? Like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Cambridge, after all. So you're in Cambridge, after all.
I saw those. Aren't they the ones you do that with? Anyway, he rowed himself out of the collision course of this other boat, but that boat kept drifting towards him. Right? And the guy, so the person in the other boat rowing towards him is like, what the hell is he doing? And he's like, why is he heading towards me? And he keeps rowing out of the way, but sure enough, on course, this boat bangs into his boat. Can you imagine his response? Right, there'll be a strong sense not only of me, like, what are you doing to my boat? There's a strong sense of you, idiot, why have you got it in for me? People always, whole big thing can start then. The dawn light rises, and he sees there is nobody in the other boat. The boat had gotten loose of its moorings on the other side of the shore, and due to the currents, drifted in and banged him. What happens in that moment when he sees that? The sense of self, what happens to the sense of self in that moment? Nothing really to make a big story around. And the teachings are pointing to that understanding, that the realized being understands that of themselves and each other. You may see that some of, intellectually this is tricky because our mind can get into moral objection. But then, who'd take responsibility for anything if that was the case, right? At that point we have to leave aside only the intellectual analysis, which is important, it's a really important piece. We have to look into our experience and make that journey into the moment-to-moment, unvarnished present, where we see ourself take shape. So I'll give you an example. Another story. Imagine this time you're in a river, maybe not your river, it looked quite calm, but in Dartmoor, say, you're on a big river with lots of stuff coming down it, and you're standing in the river. Practice is a little bit like stopping in the river and turning upstream. And even though some of us can have a romantic notion that kind of going with the flow is the way to freedom, and there's some relevance to that. Actually, if we go with the flow of everything that shows up in our mind, we'll be in trouble, right? There's not necessarily wisdom or discernment there. As the, I heard one teacher say, only, what is it? Is it only dead fish swim with the tide? Is that what it is? Is that right? So our momentum, the current of our patterns of who I take myself to be, whether I'm a, you know what your patterns are? Mm-hmm. Whether I'm the person who always goes, whoa, when something happens, or I always go, oh no, when something happens, or I always try and rationalize when something happens, or I'm the kind of person who has a pattern to what? What are your patterns? You know what patterns are, don't you? We've been around on Earth long enough to see ourselves, right? What tends to happen is we take them to be the truth. I am this kind of person. So now we're in the river and we stop. When the mind is not cultivated, when the mind has no mindfulness, no presence, no investigation, without the benefit of the qualities the practice gives, the patterns have a momentum, don't they? Mm-hmm. It's like the stuff that comes out off of Dartmoor, the leaves and the twigs and the stuff and the bits and bobs that come down, and they're coming downstream. Usually we don't see them because we're carried by that momentum and we follow them. And some of them are wholesome, some of them are beautiful. They might be about service or caring for people, or some of them aren't, but we're taken by them. Right, so somebody speaks to me rudely on the phone, for example, and I'm immediately taken by whatever is my conditioned response to that. I either shout back, or I stop talking to them, or I, you know, whatever. I don't necessarily have freedom there. I'm conditioned. I'm conditioned by what I've done 100 times before. Right? So in practice, what we see when we're willing and courageous enough to sit with our own mind, we see these currents in our own mind, the currents that's going, might be really something simple here today. I wish you'd stop talking and I could have lunch now. Come on. And if we stop and see that, we can recognize, oh yeah, I know that one about me. Oh yeah, there's that impatient one. Which until we stop with the current, we're just always following our urge for lunch. It's a kind of a simple definition, simple example. What we see is, the Buddha says, we take things to be me that actually do not have that nature. This is like a log coming down the river. We see it, because we're practicing, we see it, it's like, oh, there's a log. And we go, oh, shouldn't have that log. That shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be angry, I shouldn't be sad, I don't want to be dull, I don't want to be stuck. Right? We react to it. We don't just see the log on its way inevitably to the ocean. We try and do something around it. We react to it. And it's a little bit like when we do that, we take hold of it and we start to spin at the sides of the river, like the eddies. You know, the currents get caught, or the leaves get caught, the things start swirling, and we're stuck at the side of the river, and it feels terrible. We've lost contact with our depth, we've lost contact with the real flow of life, and we feel bereft. So our willingness to stop and practice mindfulness. Initially, we began with the samatha of just calming and steadying the mind. As we do that, we can start to look at the mind. We can see the kind of patterns that normally propel us into speech or into action. And as we stop with them, we start to have a little bit more choice. So this is really where it's profound work. That which we take to be me at the side of the river, what might it be? Anybody got an example? Anything you've reacted to in your experience this morning that you've gone, ooh, shouldn't have that, or shouldn't be one of those, or I want something else, or anybody got an example of that from today?
Got a big lump of impatience turned up.
Great. Beautifully put. Right, beautifully put. A big lump of impatience turned up. And what was your response to it?
Oh, where's that come from?
Right, okay. That's often one. It's like, where did that come from? It's like, we don't have the whole picture, and we say, that shouldn't be here. Where did that come from?
It came from nowhere.
It seems like it comes out of nowhere. Right? Was it pleasant or unpleasant or neutral?
It was pleasant before the impatience turned up, and then I was a little bit cross.
There we go, right? Do you recognize these kind of things in your mind? It's like, oh, it's all going well, and then suddenly something happens and we think it shouldn't be here, right? And we react to it. I was having a nice time. I was someone who was having a nice time, and now I'm someone who's not, and things need to be otherwise. That's what the Buddha would say, is we lock, and the sense of I was someone who was having a good time, I'm now someone who's not. And we build a picture of self in time that locks us in to a limited understanding of reality. So it's really great to see that. So these places, these eddies, you want to see them when you're there. It's like you might be at lunch and you might see somebody else has a nicer looking sandwich than yours. Right? It's like, oh, and you start to spin in the mind. Right? Because there's always this mental part with it, isn't there? It's like the leaves going whoosh. At the side, it's like, oh God, tonight I'm going to go to Waitrose and I'm going to get that kind of brown bread and oh, mayonnaise. I should have put mayonnaise and what they have, I got cucumber, right? And there we are spinning this thing. It's not a life and death scenario. But if we sit with our own mind long enough, it's so unsatisfying. It's so unsatisfying to be living for another moment. It keeps us cut, actually, from the lifeblood of what we are. The Buddha has a metaphor. He says, why are your monks and nuns so radiant? And he says, my monks and nuns are radiant because they do not hanker for the future and they do not dwell upon the past. Those who hanker for the future and dwell on the past dry up and wither, like green reeds cut down in the sun. Right? Does that ring any bell? Yeah. So it's very practical. It's very practical in that regard. We put our feet in the river, which is doing our walking meditation, cultivating our mindfulness and presence. I'm here. Okay. And then we might feel some of the old things come off the moor. And out of nowhere, woof, there's a moment, the old resonance of despair, of hurt, of dullness, of blankness. Might be other things come, like our love and our aspiration and our spaciousness and our mobility and our steadfastness and our profundity. But we stand in the river not claiming either of those as ultimately who I am. Because when we do, we suffer. And that's really what the Buddha's speaking to. Even if I take my love, you know, you might have, like I was a person having a nice time a minute ago, I felt spacious, and that was good. That's who I am. Then this lump of impatience comes, and we're busy the rest of the day, maybe, going, why is that there? It shouldn't be there. I should be like that. He should be like that. The world should be like that. Catherine should be like that. And we start reacting. This willingness to see that when we're not locking around the conditions, when the impatience arises, hurt arises, the dislike arises, the joy arises, love arises, the equanimity arises, the expansion arises. If I'm not claiming that as the final resting place to lean on, I take my hands off and all conditions are welcome. All conditions are welcome, but they do not define me. And that's what the Buddha's pointing to. And in that, the old detritus can come off the moor and find its way happily to the sea, where there's a lot more room. And we're a little freer to move. So, I'll put it in a simple way. This is what is sometimes called the teaching of emptiness of self. If you look in that eddy at the side of the river with all the leaves spinning around and all the water there, when you really look at it and you stay with it and you feel it and you breathe with it, it comes apart. There's nothing at the center of it that has an inherent existence. It's empty of self. It doesn't have something that says, this is you. It said that in your mind, this is me. I'm the dull one, I'm the bad one, I'm the good one, I'm the best one, I'm the worst one, I'm the... Right? That's what spins. But when we step back and look at it, something else is revealed. It can start to deconstruct and soften and widen. And it's empty. Empty of a center. So as one teacher put it, it sounds like a very serious teaching, but it is. But it's such a gift from the Buddha. It's so liberating to be able to attend in that way. And we can practice that as we go to lunch. The Buddha was known as the happy one. So this isn't bad news. This leads to more freedom. This seeing clearly leads to more space. More room for the joy, more room for the things that are wholesome and beneficial. And there's one lovely teacher who was asked to comment on this teaching, and he sat there, this big beam on his face, and he said, empty, 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 happy, happy, happy. Right? Then there's room. So let's make it really practical. Let's have lunch in a minute. And see what you see. Let the mindfulness be really simple. That's our gateway. That the mindfulness is the door to liberation. Keeping it really simple, eating our food, feeling our feet, seeing our wish for someone else's sandwich, seeing our view that we've got the best sandwich. You know, whatever it is, what happens in the mind, seeing all of that, seeing where we get stuck, can we breathe with that? Can we see it? Can we see what's going on from the place of awareness? I have one thing to check out with you before we go to lunch. So I've got something to read to you. And you can turn it off.